This is Tim's take on Cardiff. I wasn't quite sure when to start recording this evening, and it probably should have been half an hour ago, because my friend Sonia Preston and a friend of hers, Pat, have been looking around Cardiff city centre at various parts that were used in Doctor Who and Torchwood, which climaxed in us finding Queen's Arcade that was used in Rose, and so we took a few photos there that I'll stick up on Flickr later. But San has dragged me, kicking and indeed screaming, over to the about as near as you can get to the Millennium Stadium without going in, because apparently what we can hear currently is Madonna rehearsing for a concert that won't take place for about, well, just under a week. And Sonia's just been talking to someone that worked at the stadium, and what did they say?
Well, it doesn't look like it is her, because he said she normally does her sets earlier on in the day, to be fair, so it's more than likely a recording.
I win. I win.
The cars aren't outside.
Well, there you are. Another great dream foiled by meddling bureaucracy. But no, we're going to head back to the hostel where we're staying now, and I probably won't record again till tomorrow, because we're trying to organise on some level a meet-up of several people that we know from what I've dubbed the Doctor Who gang on Second Life. And as to how many of them will actually make it to Cardiff, even for a few hours tomorrow, on the 19th of August 2008, is entirely a mystery. But that's what makes life so exciting, isn't it, San?
It certainly is.
So, signing off for now, and probably catch up and record a bit more tomorrow. Well, it's day two of this holiday special, as it were, of Tim's take on. A bit later than originally planned, me and Sonia are now heading to see Cardiff Castle. I've just taken an extensive lot of photographs of what's known as the Animal Wall, with a lot of really well crafted and sculpted stone animals which run along the castle wall. Well, we're now going to head for the entrance to the castle, and I'll record a bit more once we're inside. And now in the castle watching a sort of promotional film about all its history and everything there is to see. This ahead of the sort of main feature, which we'll see in a room next door, once the audience before us has departed. It's very PR in its style, its presentation. No spoken words, lots of pretty pictures, and a teenage girl looking round. Well, we're now watching the main feature, an 8-minute film about the history of the castle. And once we've seen this, we'll go for a full guided tour of the place. Having now finished the main feature, we've just been handed an audio guide to the castle, and here's a little clippet of the intro to give you some kind of flavour of it.
This audio guide allows you to explore Cardiff Castle at your own pace. As you walk around, you'll see large information panels with a headphone symbol on the top right-hand corner. Next to the symbol, you'll see a number. To hear a commentary, just type that number into your...
Well, you get the general idea. It's pretty standard fare for these kind of things. And this is how the intro concludes.
There is a pause button and a red stop button if you want to stop the commentary completely. You can also fast forward and rewind the commentary using the two keys above the play and stop buttons. Don't forget to press play each time you enter a new number. Your guide is enhanced with images to help you find your way.
So we'll now proceed on our way and see what's first up. Well, we're now braving the rain, which is determined to ruin our day, and we're out in the castle green. And the guide is telling us now all about Lancelot Capability Brown, but we're only half caring because we're trying to scout around for somewhere we can dive for cover, because I'm not a big fan of rain. Sanya doesn't seem to mind and seems to find it all quite funny. But as I say, we can see the castle keep, which looks a relatively short distance away, but I have a feeling we're going to get stopped by umpteen extra bits of guide to listen to. But well, it's easing off now, so perhaps we'll brave them and head in a more orderly direction towards it. I'll tell you more once we get inside. Okay, I'm now going to try and get up all these steps to the main castle keep. As you can probably hear, it's still raining, hence the puddles. Although steep, these steps, there's nowhere near as many of them as it looked from a distance. It's not quite a St. Paul's Cathedral 300-step climb. It's more a sort of pause for thought for a couple of seconds and have a look at the view. But I will have to pause for a sec because you can see the Millennium Stadium from here, so forgive the sound effects of the camera. Well,
at 20 past 4,
it's so going to take longer than I thought, because when you see the place from a distance you think, oh, it's a fair size, and then you scout it like we did last night and you go, it's going to take a while to look round properly, even in this weather where we're trying to put a bit of pace on. So almost at the top now. The steps now become a ramp, and we actually get out of the weather for a bit.
My friend goes every year.
Finally, having found shelter from the weather, we're going to pause for a couple of seconds, I think. For all that climbing, there's very little to see up here. It's a clever optical illusion where there's this wonderful round wall, but all there is really inside it is, well, nice piece of grass to look at. And, well, you can see where the battlements were. And there's a bit more climbing, and we'll do that now. And that will take us, well, right up to the top, I think. So I'll report back after the next climb. After another rather steep climb, where we were really glad there was a handrail, albeit a wooden one, and for good reason a sign saying, "Caution, steep steps." We're now stood inside what's been described as a sort of waylay point, where there's, well, they're not windows, they're sort of exit holes that archers would have used in days of yore. And I do feel about a photography coming on. There's some amazing framing properties of this building. You look through a hole I'm looking through right now, and it frames in the distance part of one of the more modern buildings. And so if I... Poor old lens. I'm going to have to clean it soon. That's a very good idea, Sonia. Mm-hmm. Take one without it and see how we go. God, the light difference is so huge. Ah, there we go. That photo opportunity, I'm going to have to clean the lens of the camera because it's getting really bad now, so I'll check back when we're a bit higher up. Well, we've now reached another waylay or way point a bit further up the keep tower. A lot more exposed here. The windows, for we might as well call them that, don't have glass. Do have bars, but I wouldn't recommend you putting your small child up on this window ledge. They might come a cropper and decide to dive into the moat, which is not directly beneath us. For some reason, this part of the castle includes an invasion by Japanese tourists. But nothing wrong with that, because we seem to have encountered Australians and New Zealanders on elsewhere around here today. So we'll pause here for a minute and try and dry off, maybe have a bite to eat, and then head up a bit further, and I'll tell you what there is to see there. Well, I'll try and shade the recorder from the wind. We're now stood at the top of the keep, and the view would be spectacular were it not for the rather iffy weather, which thankfully the rain is easing off a bit compared to how it was at ground level. And at least once we're up here, we begin to see where we might be able to look round further, assuming that bit's open, because there's an area called Ladies' Walk, but there is some restoration and scaffolding has been raised up there. So what I'm currently trying to work out is what we can see beyond the view of the castle itself, because they tell you on the signs up here, for example, the keep was strategically positioned overlooking the surrounding hills. Castel Coq, another ancient castle, can be glimpsed on a hillside to the north beyond the castle's extensive park. The castle's Victorian stables are within the park, whilst to the east are Cardiff's Grand Edwardian Civic Buildings. which is all very interesting, but doesn't tell you what you can see beyond the castle. Well, to my left, when looking to the north, I can see what I'm assuming currently is Cardiff City Football Ground, because as a non-football fan, I've absolutely no idea whether or not that is it or not. It is a major football ground, for sure. Looking straight on, I can see, well, a pathway through the parkland of the castle. If I'm right, and it's getting mistier now, unfortunately, because I was trying to work this out a minute ago, if I'm right, it may be possible to see as far as Cardiff Bay from up here, but unfortunately the mist is now getting so thick that it's swallowing up what little view there was in that direction. So we'll head round to the other side and tell you what I can see when you look south. The beautiful and extensive grounds of the castle stretch out in front of us, with a sort of new modern building visitor centre to our left. To the right, you see the amazingly colourful sort of clock tower, and the time is now 11:45, so I can just hear a chime of a nearby church clock. Right in front of me at the moment is the Millennium Stadium. And in the distance to my right, I can see yet another sports ground of some description. It's at this point you wish you either had someone local with you or someone who's visited Cardiff a heck of a lot more times than I have. Because they'd be going, oh yes, that's definitely such and such. But sorry, I don't have that level of knowledge. So I'll finally head over to the last bit of the view, where you can see what I'm guessing is Cardiff Town Hall, and there's various modern buildings of the city centre. You can see a good certainly at least one of the main hotels from here, and probably the tops of some of the buildings that have masqueraded as London's West End shopping district in episodes of Doctor Who. So I think Sonia's found another thing to listen to on the audio guide, and as the weather is clearing up, I'll take a pause from recording and take a few more photos before we head down and out of here, and we'll do a bit of shopping, which I probably won't tell you about on here, and then we're going to head over to Cardiff Bay for the much vaunted Second Life RL Doctor Who meetup. Well, after much expectation and planning and people saying they'd come and people were saying they couldn't come and money worries, the long-awaited Second Life Doctor Who meetup is well in progress. I'm stood here in an extremely noisy bowling alley with Maureen Dalek Tomorrow, one of the chief designers of the Doctor Who experience in Cardiff in Second Life, and my friend who on Second Life is called Mimi Moulintoug. And in the next few minutes we're going to head over and see the Cardiff Doctor Who exhibition, so I'll check back once we get over there. I'm sorry about the noise, but the whole of this particular attraction really is this noisy. We're now in the Doctor Who exhibition in the Red Dragon Centre, and Sonia here is busy learning about all those Doctors who she only heard about so far, and she's yet to quite see all the episodes, but there are exciting and scary monsters on display here, though, aren't there?
Yeah, very scary.
But, to the makers of this exhibition, she would like to point out that there is a grammatical error in the Tom Baker entry.
OK. Yeah, there's a missing full stop. After the Fourth Doctor was a man of contrast, there's just a space, and then it says capital B, but it was the Doctor's old enemy, blah, blah, blah. There should be a full stop after contrast. Sort it out, people.
And this is meant to be an educational exhibition, so it's not very good, is it? So I'll check back in a sec when we've walked around a bit further. A little bit of an update here for anyone planning on coming to this exhibition in Cardiff, and that's that the Kung Fu Warrior Monks exhibit has actually been improved and made a bit more photography friendly, because although it's in a sort of Perspex case, they've got rid of one of the main sheets of Perspex, or certainly at the moment, so you can take photographs very easily without getting any flash reflection. Yeah, if I turn around, immediately behind me is the Lazarus machine from the Lazarus experiment, and they've got one of David Tennant's costumes, and they've got a Freema Agyeman outfit, the leather jacket and jeans kind of set up. We're now checking out all the title sequences that Doctor Who has had over the years, because there's a touchscreen computer now in the exhibition where you can just touch a screen and instantly look at all the titles. So Sonia's going through all of these as she's not seen many of them before. Oh, now we're on 1980, all the Starfields and Tom Baker's head slowly forming.
The key change as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
this is the Peter Howell version of the theme tune.
Ah.
6 weeks of hard graft.
Right. Is this the one that they showed on Blue Peter, where they showed somebody doing all the slidey things and saying, now this is where we bring in this? And
no, that might have been that one.
Oh, was it? It was
1974. So now we've jumped forward to Peter Davison. More Starfield action. You can tell titles cost a lot of money to make, because they changed them in 1980, and then they changed them slightly for Peter Davison. And then when it came to Colin Baker's titles, all they did was took Peter Davison's titles and put a little smudgy glow thing on them, and then put Colin Baker's head in.
Not much of a change, really, is it?
No, I mean, well, I mean, to change it radically would have cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Now we come to the CGI titles from 1987. Not exactly everyone's favourite version of the theme tune, this.
No, I can't say that that's really a hit with me.
Yes, the
last couple, really.
Yes, the Kev McCulloch version of the theme tune, this. Probably because of rights issues, they don't have the titles of the TV movie in 96.
What a surprise.
Yeah, so onwards and onwards, and I'll tell you a bit more about the exhibition up next. After a bit of searching, we've managed to find a new exhibit in the exhibition. They've got the Skull spacesuit from Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead, and very creepy it looks too, stood up, raised above us here. I'm now stood right in front of another new addition to the Cardiff Doctor Who exhibition, and that's the Centauran Commander Storr from The Poison Sky, and the Centauran Stratagem. And he's a very intimidating fellow. You can look him right in the eye and get very, very close to him, so Well, we'll see if we can distract him by taking a photo. I'm now stood in front of the final addition to this exhibition from Series 4. It's the Hath from Episode 6. And up close it looks even more like the... even more like a creature from John Pertwee's era. So I'll take a photo of him now and then we'll head into the shop and see what's on sale. Well, we're now in the shop at the Cardiff Doctor Who exhibition where I've been able to buy a Doctor Who ice cube tray and a Zygon coaster. And my friend Sanya here is looking through various Dalek and Cyberman things but can't quite decide what to buy at the moment. So they've got everything in here from blow up Daleks, big Daleks, small Daleks, Dalek poppers for your wine, umbrellas for the bad weather, all the way through to watches and busts of characters such as Jabe. And of course they've also got a selection of the action figures, or certainly from Series 1, 2 and 3. Well, we're back on the Doctor Who locations hunt, having just stood where the TARDIS landed for parting of the ways. We're now walking towards... well, we're stood in a playground and we're walking towards the Bad Wolf graffiti from, well, I think it would be from the story Bad Wolf. So, a feeling there may be a we're pointing at this type photo about to be taken. Well, we've now come to a rather anonymous street in suburban Cardiff where part of the episode Rose was filmed, where the character of Clive lived, and Mickey was eaten by a wheelie bin. We've been stood here for over 5 minutes now trying to work out where it all was filmed, but I've taken a few photographs and I've got Rose on DVD back at the hostel, so we'll have a look at it later tonight and hopefully put the whole thing to rest. Well, we've just been to see the church that featured in Father's Day and finally managed to get some decent quality photographs of it, seeing as we have still got a little bit of daylight left. And we're now heading towards a rather disused looking shop front, and I am now stood where the TARDIS landed, or where it left and from at any rate. And that's about it for the location, I think. There's not many more in this area. But unless we have any sudden ideas, that's probably the end of this bit of the podcast. you join me now on Wednesday the 20th of August 2008. At a mad dash packing everything up to leave this morning, and managed to totally miss my 5 to 11 train that would have got me as far as London. Thankfully, what with being on holiday with a couple of friends, managed to wangle a lift at least as far as London in their car. And so now, with the time at 2:10, we're goodness knows how far out of London, but at least heading in the right direction. And the idea is to drop me at a Central Line tube station, and then I should be able to get a ticket and head straight to King's Cross. And then at King's Cross I can get a ticket and head back home. But it's been a blessing in disguise, really, because I've had more time to hang out with my friend Sanya. We've been listening to CDs on the car stereo and enjoying the scenery or lack of it sometimes, out the windows. But I guess I'll probably check in again when I've managed to get on a train home from London. Well, I'm now sitting on a rather empty, rather quiet tube train on the Hammersmith and City line, but when it does start moving, will get me to King's Cross, where I can catch a train home. So goodness knows when it'll start moving, because it looks like it's change of shift here, with the driver having got off and waiting for another driver. So I guess I'll check in again when I've managed to get on a train home. I'm now on the train home, heading back to Cambridge. In fact, having sighted a couple of landmarks out of the train window, I know that I'm almost there. I guess this brings this particular podcast to a close, and hope you've enjoyed my insights in this audio diary of a show about Cardiff.